Hello, and welcome to episode 42 of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. We've got three great segments for you this week. Kicking things off, we have the conclusion to our Pikmin series, this week focusing on Pikmin 3. That's with JP, Andy, and Carmine. After that, we have the next installment of In Focus with Nicholas Bray, this week focusing on Game & Watch. And closing the show out, we have a segment about Theater Rhythm, Final Fantasy. That's with myself, Neil, Danny, and Nate. Enjoy.
Connectivity, Pikmin, three-week extravaganza. We are back one more time for our exciting conclusion to the Pikmin extravaganza. With me is, once again, Mr. J.P. Corbin.
Hey, everybody.
And, of course, with us again as well is Carmine Red. How you doing, Kai?
Look out behind you! It's a giant space rabbit!
Zach, unfortunately, cannot be here with us. He is elsewhere, I guess. He's too busy to be talking to us tonight, but
he's got better things to do than talk to us.
He like playing Pikmin 2, I suppose.
Hopefully.
Probably.
100%ing it.
That's really the only way to go. This, this last year at E3, Nintendo opened up their press conference with a look at Pikmin 3, a game they've been teasing for a really long time.
Yeah, I think it was there in 2009, I think, was when they started teasing it. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I want to say they had two or three consecutive E3s where they just sort of acknowledged that it existed and said nothing more.
This is the first time they actually showed anything.
Really, not only showed, but even said anything about the game.
Well, I mean, in an official context. I think Miyamoto mentioned it at the developer roundtable several years in a row. But
I'm just talking about in terms of any sort of specifics about what the game was really
right,
going to be.
Right, yes. Yeah.
There had been some speculation before E3 that when we saw Pikmin 3, it may be a surprising departure from the series norm. What we got was not a surprising departure. It
was a non-surprising, very much the same thing as the previous games.
It's very much a natural evolution of what we've seen before, which
at least what we've
I'm
seen
more or
so
less
far.
Okay with.
I mean, like, we didn't see that much.
This is true.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the E3 demo, do you think they sort of, like, it was too cultivated an experience? They had just one level here and one level there, and it was, like, really a demo level?
The E3 demo, I mean, it was Pikmin. It was, you know, entirely familiar stuff. I mean, apart from the little segments that were showing off the specific capabilities of the rock Pikmin, none of it would have felt out of place in either of the previous games. I mean, it kind of, you know, there was the specific things, and the boss battle used it a lot, and certain parts of the trial course used it, where you had to use the rock Pikmin to break, like, a solid kind of glass kind of object. But other than that,
like the four captains in the demo, or was it really just one captain? Or?
No, it was you played one captain. It's like you played one captain, and you only had the red Pikmin and the rock Pikmin. So you didn't have yellow or blue, or I don't know if the purple or whites are coming back. But if they are, they weren't in the demo. So
I'm certain that they wouldn't remove Pikmin types in this. That seems like a bad idea.
Well, the problem is that the rock Pikmin are very similar to the purple Pikmin, at least in terms of combat ability. I mean, they feel pretty similar to the purple ones. And I mean, the purple ones have the ability of the weight, but, I mean, in combat, rock and purple felt pretty similar.
Okay. Well, we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah.
I would be surprised.
I would be surprised. I don't think they're going to cut them out, but, I mean, like, they're at least going to be pretty similar to what we saw here.
Now, in the demo, you are picking up cherries, I think it was?
Well, it was different
or
types
marbles?
Of fruit. It was okay. Different types of fruit. And each, what I liked about it was the demo had, it was like a high score thing. Each type of fruit was worth a different amount of points or whatever it was. And so, and like, that's why I went back and I played that demo at least four times, each time trying to beat my high score. I think I maxed out at something like 1450, which the guy running the demo said was pretty good. So,
Did you use both controls, like the Wii Remote and then the gamepad as well?
I used the gamepad the first day. It doesn't work that well. And in fact, I went back to the same demo unit the second day, and the guy told me, they're not letting people play with the gamepad anymore. So they must have Like, they want to go back and tweak it some. And I get it, because it didn't work all that well. Because you were still using the infrared pointer. You were using the pointer on the gamepad, and that means you were trying to tilt the controller with both hands to try and aim, which doesn't work nearly as well.
Why don't they just go back to the GameCube control scheme if you're going to play with the, pad?
Because I think, like, they're trying to make the pointer the main way to play the game, and it's... We talked about in the last couple of weeks, we talked about going back and adding the pointer controls to the first two games, which didn't always work completely right. I mean, there were certain elements that didn't work exactly the way they should because of the transition in controls. And so this game, the pointer is the way, and it's kind of demanding the precision of aiming Pikmin that the pointer provides that you just didn't have when you were aiming them in the first two games with the GameCube controls. I
didn't get to play the demo, but I was rewatching the footage, and it seems like this sort of might be a theme with this, that you have to, like, aim specifically at, like I saw, like a wall of mushrooms, and you have to throw Pikmin at each mushroom in order to smush them down.
Aiming is important. I mean, you couldn't really do it as much in the GameCube games, because you just didn't have the ability to aim them that well the way the game worked. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the Wii versions of the game are so good, is that it gives you that ability and it comes in handy, but the game wasn't designed for it, so it doesn't generally demand it. This game, I think, is going to demand it from time to time. And so I think, I don't know. Now, when I did play it with the gamepad, the right stick didn't do anything as far as I could tell, so it may be an option to play it that way that they just weren't showing off. I don't know, but I didn't hear anything about that.
So when do you guys think this will come out? Because, I mean, what was it? Was it holiday? Was it launch window? What did
it was
Nintendo
launch
officially
window. I believe the press kit called it a launch window release. I would be very surprised if it's not there day one, or at least like the first game where it's like a couple weeks after launch, but I think it's out before the end of the year, at least.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if this thing took much longer to get out. They have to have a strong launch lineup. And this is almost certainly a Wii title before it was a Wii U title.
Yes,
this has probably been done for a while.
I don't know about done, but it's been in development for a long time. Yeah. I mean, like, this is... They took the Wii game and they said, well, this isn't gonna... So they just transferred it over to Wii U, so it's like... I don't know. They've been working on this for a long time. I would be surprised if it's not there at launch, because Nintendo doesn't really have another game like it at launch, like a gamer-focused game at launch.
No.
Because you have Nintendo Land, which is very good. I really like what I played of Nintendo Land, but it isn't really aimed at us. This isn't the kind of game that they're trying to sell the system to people like us with. Mario's good, but it's Mario. It's something we've all played before, and the new features don't do that much. Pikmin is a game that people have been waiting for a long time, and I don't think it would sell a ton of hardware, but it would sell some hardware if they had it out at launch.
Yeah, I mean, I know, maybe, do you think we're just coming at this too much like Nintendo fans because we're really excited for Pikmin? Because didn't the first game barely move over a million, and then the second game the sales dropped? I mean, is this something that we love, but not a lot of other people will look at it during launch? Or is this a chance for people to, you know, discover Pikmin?
I think Pikmin, and Pikmin 2 especially, are a bit of, like, cult classic kind of things, where the first one sold well, mostly because it was a new idea, and it was a launch title, so that helped it. Second one didn't sell that well, but I think it's remembered well. It's like the kind of game that it didn't sell very well, but people remember it as being good, even people who I don't think even played it. It's got a good buzz around it. So I think there will be people who haven't even played the first two that would be excited to play this because of all the good things they've heard about the series.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, what, like, imagine a year ahead, like 6 months after launch, and let's say Pikmin 3 sold 750,000 units. You know, is that good? Is that bad? I mean, I know it's launch, and there's like 23 games in that launch window.
I think it's a game that if it's there at launch, it will sell really well because it's Nintendo first party and because it's a game that a lot of people have waited for and it's a game with a lot of buzz. So I think it'll do really well if it's at launch, and I think it'll do really well if it's coming out in January or February. It's a game that'll do well no matter when it comes out, but I think, I mean, really either way, I think it's gonna do well. Mainly because of all the kind of hype surrounding it.
I agree. I think it's a game that will do well for being one of the few gamer-focused Nintendo products at the system's launch. You know, as much as the Wii U has sort of, the hype has sort of died down for the Wii U, it's still a new piece of hardware and a lot of people are going to pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's more kind of third-party stuff that fits this kind of mold of gamer-focused games, but this is the one from Nintendo, and it'll sell. I mean, I think it'll do well. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Everyone here is looking forward to it.
That's why we're here.
Now, we know the game will have local multiplayer, but we know it will not have online multiplayer. What do you guys make of that?
That, to me, seems like something like they want to make sure the game's out on time.
That's the only explanation
I can think of that makes any sense. Because, I mean, like, this game is supposed to have... Like, you play the co-op modes in Pikmin 2, and this is supposed to be even more like that, because you get four different captains in the game. It would be perfect for online co-op. It would be a great way to show off the system, and... I don't know. It seems odd to me that they wouldn't at least try and include that.
Yeah. I mean, if we're thinking of it as a Wii game that they moved on to the Wii U, and they want to have as a launch title, I guess I can see that. But maybe this just means there's room for improvement with Pikmin 4, you know? I'll buy that.
That's the thing there, is that if you were making this game on the Wii and you wanted to do co-op, you couldn't do co-op. It wouldn't work, because you need voice chat for a game like this to do co-op. You would need something like that, and you just didn't have it on the Wii. And so, I mean, like, maybe they just didn't think of it, or they just dismissed it on the Wii, and then they...
That didn't stop them from making Battalion Wars 2 an online co-op game.
Well, yeah, and how well did that go?
No, it didn't go very well at all.
Okay, as I've always said, Nintendo generally learns from their mistakes. They don't always learn what you want them to learn, but they learn.
Yeah.
I would love to have it co-op. I would love to go on and play co-op with you guys when we get the Wii U. And I mean, I would love it. It doesn't bother me too much not having it. I'm still going to play the hell out of the game. But, I mean, yeah, it would have been nice.
It kind of feels like a concerning sign that despite Nintendo's big talk about migrating towards the core gamer and strengthening their online business, that they're not taking it as seriously as they say they are.
Now that I think about that, is there any game at launch that's confirmed to have online multiplayer?
Was this confirmed specifically not to have online co-op?
I think it does, yes. It has specifically been confirmed that it doesn't.
Yeah, I think Miyamoto came out and said that it would be too difficult to communicate the locations of the Pikmin back and forth.
Which is crazy, but still.
It kind of gives you the impression that Miyamoto is not familiar with modern netcode.
Oh, yes. I think
he's an artist, first and foremost. You know, he started drawing arcade cabinet boards, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, yeah, it's not surprising that Miyamoto doesn't understand, but you would hope that they have someone at Nintendo who does understand it. And
you'd hope.
Well, that's why I think a lot of Nintendo's game culture has to change. They make really great games, but there are certain things that they don't catch on to. Like, they're very much about intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic achievements, which you see in a lot of Western network experiences.
Yeah.
So, I mean they're making games that they think of for gamers, but there's certain types. Like, Miyamoto went and said, I could make an FPS, but I don't want to.
I think part of it is it's not so much that they can't. It's a cultural thing. You don't see as much focus on online stuff in Japan as you do in the West. I mean, even you look at Sony. Sony's better at it than Nintendo, but they're still nowhere near as good at it as Microsoft, who is a fully Western company and who really knows what they're doing there. Sony's getting better, okay, but they're better than Nintendo. They've tried more, but they're still not great. I think it's somewhat of a cultural divide as part of it.
Do you guys think, switching topics, because this is a rabbit hole, honestly.
Yes, yes, we don't need to keep going. This is like seven other connectivity segments.
Do you guys feel, because I kind of feel like Pikmin 3 is a make or break title for this franchise. If it doesn't do well, I think it's very possible we don't see another Pikmin game.
I don't think it's possible for it not to do well, being a launch title and having so much, you know, going into it. I mean, I think if it's at launch or even just in the first quarter, I think it's going to sell. I think this game will do well. The question for me is Pikmin 4, if they do another one, is how well will that do? Because I think being a launch title always helps. Being, you know, like I said, people have been waiting for this for a long time. It's got a considerable amount of hype built up into it. It's like you look on the GameCube. Pikmin 1 did well. It was a million seller. Pikmin 2 didn't do that well. So
did it even sell 500,000 copies?
I haven't seen numbers. I don't know if there's any official numbers out. So
I'd be surprised to hear if it broke a million. I haven't heard anything around that.
Yeah.
It was a player's choice at one point, wasn't it? There was a sales floor for that.
Yeah, but I think it was below a million for player's choice.
It was below a million on GameCube. It was. Used to be a million, but on GameCube, I think I'm not sure. It might have only been 250,000 though, so that wouldn't answer the question.
Hopefully, the Wii version will add to that a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess part of me would always
there'll be a Pikmin 4. You know, I almost feel like even if this is a very good showing for Pikmin 3, I don't know if Nintendo will say, you know what, we've got more ideas. I don't know if they'll want to move on to something else.
I'd love for them to branch onto 3DS and see what they could do with the Pikmin game on a handheld.
I would love to see that. I would absolutely love to see that.
I can't tell you the joy in my heart when I watched Pikmin carry my DSi games over to my 3DS.
That was the best part, and it was like it took like 2 hours or something because I had a ton of stuff, but it was cool. I liked that little bit of it. I would love to see Pikmin on the 3DS. And I think if we do see another Pikmin game anytime soon, it probably will be on the 3DS. Given that system's popularity in Japan and how well it's doing and how much easier it would probably be to develop it that way, I think if we see another one soon, it'll be on the 3DS.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, given that the game's not out, we don't have a ton to talk about for this segment. But let's go back to that demo you played at E3.
Right.
Talk about that boss battle for a little bit.
The boss battle was interesting. I mean, it was a really well-done Pikmin boss battle. I mean, it was you needed to use the rock Pikmin to break the shell on the boss and so that you could attack it. So it's like you would have to switch off between the rock Pikmin. You would break the shell with the rock Pikmin and then use the red Pikmin to attack, because red ones will latch on and continue attacking. The rock ones won't. You can, like, throw them at them and it'll do damage, but they won't latch on. So, you know, you want to switch off between the different types of Pikmin, and it was done well. I liked it. I mean,
How long did that boss battle take?
It took a few minutes. I mean, it was, and you know, having played the original Pikmin and Pikmin 2 recently, it doesn't seem to be that much different in terms of time as the other games in the series. One thing I like is that there's a dedicated button for switching the type of Pikmin that you're going to throw. Like I said, this game seems to be more focused on throwing Pikmin and using the pointer to throw them than the first two games, so it makes it easier. It's like you can switch between different types of Pokemon Pikmin.
If you devowel them, they end up
the same. They are very similar words.
I thought for the longest time when Pikmin was in development that it was a Pokemon spinoff.
Yeah. Like they should do that. You combine Pokemon with Nobunaga's ambition.
Oh, God.
Combine Pikmin with Nobunaga's ambition. Combine Pikmin, Pokemon with Pikmin. There you go. That's a new game.
Pikmin Advance Wars.
Oh, my goodness. Now you're talking my language.
I would play the hell out of that game.
Heck yeah.
But anyway, you can press the C button to switch between different types of Pikmin quickly, which is something I missed when I was playing the new Play Control games, because it's like there was a way to do it, but it wasn't as slick as the Pikmin 3 made it. So it's like Pikmin 3 feels like a more polished version of the controls from the new Play Control games. It's a game partially because the game is built around those controls, so you can do more with it, and partially because they just seem to work better. So,
yeah. I'm really curious what the storyline's going to be for this game, because I think the story in both Pikmin 1 and 2 are really well done. It was they're both well written games. So I'm really curious to see if that carries. I would assume it would carry forward. I mean, Pikmin 2 was a very well polished game, like I mentioned last week. So I'm very curious to see what they do with the story and presentation for Pikmin 3.
Didn't they say something like Mario? I mean, Olimar is missing in this one, and none of the captains is Olimar.
Yeah, you're controlling four captains, but none of them are Olimar, which seems
really
to be hinting at you are rescuing Olimar.
Okay.
That seems to be where the story's heading, at least from what I saw.
Interesting.
And I don't know. I thought that someone somewhere would have said that this is like Olimar's family because they've been an off stage thing. Like I'd love to see it if this was Olimar's wife, you know, if it was one of the captains and his kid was another one. That would be pretty cool. It could become like a space family Pikmin Robinson thing going on.
Nice.
But yeah, that seems to be about all of the story we heard at E3. It really wasn't much of it.
Sort of changing the topic again, but did you actually use the gamepad as a map? Because I thought it was like recently confirmed that you can control with the Wii Remote, and then you can just have the gamepad down there and look at it.
Yes, you can do that. When I didn't use it that much, but that's something you can do. They had a stand set up that you could put the gamepad on, so you could still see the map and that while you were playing with the remote in Nunchuck, which is a nice little feature to it.
I'm not sure having another controller in my lap is something that I want to continually refer to while I'm playing a game. I'd rather just have a sub map.
Well, I think it's, I mean,
on screen map.
I seem to get the impression that you might be getting this stand might be in with the system. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe, like, we've heard talk that there's going to be, like, a charging stand for the gamepad, so maybe it doubles as that.
Well, in that video, the Miiverse demo for the Direct before the E3 conference.
Oh, that train wreck.
Didn't he put the Wii U controller on a stand of some kind to do video conferencing?
Yes.
Was it the same kind of deal?
It was the same kind of thing. So it seems like this is going to be a standard thing.
Okay.
But I didn't really make use of the map stuff. I mean, it's nice, but I think the areas at E3 didn't really need it because the trial course was fairly small. Mm-hmm. And the boss
battle. And you only
had
one captain. So
right. You only had one captain. You only had so many Pikmin. Yeah, and it was like a pretty small contained area. So, I mean, I didn't need the map as much. I would imagine on a bigger map, when I'm trying to manage different squads of Pikmin with different commanders, it could come in really handy.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think that'll pretty much wrap it up for Pikmin Extravaganza 3-week special and our Pikmin 3 segment. I'm really looking forward to this game. This is the game that's selling me on a Wii U, although I'm more excited for Mario now than I was before E3. I think I just really liked what I saw of Mario at E3. But this is still the game that I'm most looking forward to picking up with my Wii U. This is really the only thing that has me really excited to buy a Wii U at launch.
Yeah. I'm excited for a lot of reasons, but this is probably the biggest one. I mean, after being at E3, I mean, you look at the press conference, it wasn't that great, but what was there was pretty good. There were a lot of really good things there, but really what stood out the most and what I'm looking forward to the most is Pikmin 3.
Well, guys, thanks for joining me, and happy Pikmining, I guess. I don't know.
Pikmin picking?
Happy picking.
Yes.
Now go rescue Olimar.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Hello, and welcome to this latest edition of NFocus. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and this week I'm going to be taking a closer look at a 1980s icon, the Game & Watch. The Game & Watch is a series of small, self-contained handheld games that were created and produced by Nintendo from 1980 until 1991. The concept and overseer of the project was a man named Gunpei Yokoi, who of course went on to create other famous Nintendo titles and also created the Game Boy. The Game & Watch handhelds feature a small LCD screen with buttons on either side. Most commonly, they utilize two buttons. There are also another couple of buttons that let you switch between two different difficulties, and of course another that sets the time and alarm. 43.4 million units of the Game & Watch series have apparently been sold worldwide, with the series consisting of a total of 59 retail games, and one that was a contest prize version of Super Mario Bros. That Nintendo gave away to contestants of their F1 Grand Prix tournament. This version came in a yellow color and only 10,000 were produced. The idea for the Game Watch came to Genpo Yokoi whilst he was traveling on the Shinkansen. he noticed a bored businessman playing with an LCD calculator. This sparked Yokoi's imagination, and he quickly came up with the idea for a small game machine which doubled as a clock. Over the 1980s, Nintendo released various versions, or lines, of new Game & Watches. These variations differed in various ways, some being simply a change in the color of the faceplate, while others offered new functions or improved screen size. A lot of the most popular variations were to continue throughout the decade, being released alongside other lines concurrently. The first variation of Game & Watches are known as the Silver and Gold line. The Silver and Gold line features a smallish 4x3 screen, with either 2 or 4 button games being released in this format. The games in this line were released during 1980 until 1981, and include the games Ball, Fire, Helmet, Flagman, Judge, Lion, Vermin, and Manhole. Some of these games were later re-released in different versions. The next variation of the Game & Watch made its debut in July of 1981 and lasted until 1991. This was a series where the Game & Watch started to gain some major success and defined the mainstream standards and expectations of the series. This series is known as the widescreen line. The games included are Parachute, Fire, Manhole, Octopus, Turtle Bridge, Tropical Fish, Popeye, Fire Attack, Super Mario Bros., Chef, Snoopy Tennis, Climber, Mickey Mouse, Donkey Kong Jr., Balloon Fight, Egg, Mario Cement Factory, and Mario the Juggler. After the widescreen series, the next line to be introduced was known as the multi-screen line. This line started in 1982 and was continued to be produced until 1989. There are actually two variations of this line, one where the screens were stacked on top of each other, like how the Nintendo DS screens were positioned, and another type where the screens were set alongside each other, more like opening a book. The games available in this series are Oil Panic, Mario Bros., Squish, Donkey Kong, Rain Shower, Bomb Sweeper, Mickey and Donald, Lifeboat, Safe Buster, Greenhouse, Pinball, Gold Cliff, Donkey Kong Jr., Blackjack, and Zelda. After the multi-screen series, the following variations do not have as many games released for them. It is worth noting that with the release of Donkey Kong, it was the first game to utilize the new cross D-pad control input, which went on to receive a Technology and Engineering Emmy Award. Releasing in 1983, the tabletop line of games looked like a tiny arcade machine. These games were full color, utilizing a new color liquid crystal for the display. They also could play some primitive musical sounds. Apparently, that while the color was great looking, the games could be hard to see if not in good lighting. There are 4 games in this series, Donkey Kong Jr., Snoopy, Mario Cement Factory, and Popeye. Following the tabletop line, we go into a line called Panorama. These games utilize the color screens from the tabletop line, but were presented in a more compact form. With the Panorama titles, you had to open the handheld up via a hinge so that the game could be reflected onto a mirror that sat inside. These games were released from 1983 until 1984 and include the games Snoopy, Popeye, Donkey Kong Jr., Mario Bombs Away, Mickey Mouse, and Donkey Kong Circus. Snoopy, Popeye, and Donkey Kong Jr. were ports from the tabletop line. The next line only featured 2 games, known as the Super Color line, and released in 1984. These games were presented with a vertical screen that had different colored LCD panels to represent various characters on screen. These colored panels were more like overlays of plastic and could only color parts of the screen in those specific colors. Think of it like those early arcade games which had plastic over the screen to create a hard color effect in that area. The games in this series are Crab Grab and Spitball Sparky. In 1984, Nintendo also introduced the Game & Watch Micro Versus. These games were created so that 2 players could play simultaneously. These games feature 2 small wired gamepads and a rectangular screen section for the main game. Only 3 games were made for this line: Boxing, which is apparently similar to Punch-Out, Donkey Kong 3, and Donkey Kong Hockey. The last variation of the Game & Watch series is known as the Crystal line and debuted in 1986. The design of these games utilize a hard translucent shell that covers the whole of the game area. Literally, you can see through the screen, as the part that displays the on-screen characters is wedged between 2 transparent sheets. The titles in this series were all remakes from earlier widescreen releases, these being Super Mario Bros., Climber, and Balloon Fight. After the Game & Watch has ceased to be produced, Nintendo has released various collections and reimaginings of Game & Watch titles. There have been collections of the games on the Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and the Nintendo DS. And that will conclude my overview of the various Game & Watch releases. I hope you enjoyed this segment. Until the next EndFocus, goodbye.
Segment on Theater Rhythm, Final Fantasy edition. Or no, there is no edition. But I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, who I've put in about 12 hours to Theater Rhythm involving three nights of 3 a.m. And I've also got Danny Bivens, who pretty much originated the Theater Rhythm Addicts Anonymous, because he's had the Japanese copy since February, and wrote a review for us a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, say hi, Danny.
Hi, Danny. See what I did there.
We've also got the person who's reviewing the North American version of the game for us, Nate Andrews, who's put about 20 hours into it, involved a...
Is this what we're doing? We're going to go around and shame each other?
A 4 or 5 a.m. night last night?
Yeah.
Was that it? Yeah.
Yeah, thereabouts.
And then we got Scott Thompson, who has a baby and has only put 5 hours into it.
But I did have my first late night play last night where I stayed up to like 2 a.m. playing. So
good man.
Yeah, so
right there with you.
If you're going into this without really knowing what the hell Theater Rhythm is, the way the name is spelled is ridiculous because it's actually the at rhythm. But I think like Danny, you could probably back this up more. But apparently the Japanese, spelling of this name, or the Japanese translation, or the original name of it, actually makes sense.
Yeah,
whereas in English, it kind of loses a little bit.
Exactly. The Japanese version is Shiatorizumu, like theatrhythm. It's kind of like a play on words, combining words together. So,
yeah,
and that's how I've been pronouncing it.
That's how I will always pronounce it.
Yeah, like splitting it up into two words, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've been told by people at Square Enix, I think... I called it the at rhythm, and then someone got pissed off at me. They're like, no, it's theater rhythm. I'm like, but that's not how it's spelt, dick. But yeah, so what this game is, it's a rhythm game with a bunch of Final Fantasy songs, and they kind of make it so it's like sort of a Final Fantasy game in that you have three different ways that you play the different songs. There are event stages, which basically there's like a nice 3D cutscene in the background, and then you'll have your movements kind of going on the top screen, like an Elite Beat Agents, where they're kind of moving all over, and you have three interactions, which is regular tapping, you know, tap and hold, and then like swipes, but it's not necessarily a swipe, it's like a put the stylus down and then go to the right. It's not just like a flick. It takes a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah, those were the hardest right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And those only get harder.
Yeah. Those bastards. There are two other modes. The event stages are probably comprised the least amount because they are only in one of the, well, I guess two of the three modes. But the one that you'll probably spend the most time in does not have that. It focuses on the battle and the field stages. The field stages involve, you know, just one character walking through a field, and it's kind of like the traditional, just like one line of notes going from left to right, and then you have to time it, and, you know, at the correct time. And then the last one, the battle one, is where you have each character of your four-character party is displayed on the right of the screen, and they each have a line. And in that, you're hitting the notes and attacking enemies, which, when you're doing the regular battle stage, like, it's kind of cool because you'd be like, oh, shit, it's Kefka. But that really doesn't do too much. You're basically going to, you know, 100% the song if you can. But then there's another mode of the game that we'll talk about a little later where that gets really ridiculous. But they have it broken into series mode where there is 5 songs from each game, Final Fantasy 1 through 13. And the opening and ending songs are not really that interactive. There's kind of just like a crystal on a screen and you tap it in rhythm to get Rhythmia or Rhythpo, mm-hmm. as it is in the Japanese version. Which kind of gets you more unlocks and is your way to beating the story mode of the game. And then there's one of each, the event, the battle, and the field for each game. And then that's the series mode where you basically just go through that for each game. And once you do that, then you unlock the songs in challenge mode where you can play them individually. I guess, what do you guys have to say about series and challenge mode?
I only went through series once... maybe twice, to get to basically get to challenge mode, and then I just stayed there for a while, and then, you know, went up through expert and then ultimate through every song.
Wow. Yeah, because kind of my progression through the game is I went through, the basic, because at the outset, you can only go through the basic in the series mode, which I guess for rhythm experts, or even people that are mildly advanced and familiar with the genre, it's kind of cake. But I feel that that works to the game's advantage because it kind of gives you that time to understand the mechanics of the game and kind of enjoy the songs. And then, you know, that immediate boost up to expert, which is the second difficulty, like that's significantly harder. And then ultimates for some songs is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But you have to go through basic to unlock all the songs at first, which is a little bit of a drag, I guess.
Okay, I went through the series mode several times, you know, in all of the different levels, and my god, I mean, like you said, it just gets really, really crazy once you're on the hardest difficulty level, like to the point where you want to throw your 3DS across the room.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a point where I've just been going through the expert challenge mode stages to unlock the expert series mode, because mm-hmm. you have to, it's kind of like weird how each part of the game kind of depends on the other one, and that you need to play series mode to unlock songs in challenge mode, then to unlock the next tier in series mode, you need to play through all the songs in challenge mode, and you also have to do that on the final difficulty to unlock them in series mode. And then Chaos Shrine is kind of off in its own world. But Scott, what have you been doing with the series in the challenge mode?
Well, yeah, like you said, it starts off pretty easy, and if you're not a fan of every single Final Fantasy game, it's kind of a chore to get through every single series. I find, like, I went immediately and played, like, 6, and then I kind of went around and picked the games I was familiar with, so I did, like, 4, and then 7, 8, 9, and that's pretty much it for me. Like, I've played a little bit of 10, I never played... I played 11, which was god-awful, but then
The music in 11 is fucking awesome. I don't really know anything about the game, but holy shit, the music in that game.
I mean, right. There was a lot of production value in 11. It wasn't like it was just a cheap knockoff, like, trying to cash in. It was just a bad game. But there was a lot of production.
That's the MMO for anyone who's not familiar. Yeah.
Which is allegedly the most profitable of all of the Final Fantasy games ever.
Well, I mean, it's still active.
Yeah, which is incredible. But like you said, too, the music is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, and even the cutscenes like that play throughout it. You know, like, it was a very well-produced game, just not a great game to actually play. But, so it was kind of, like, slow going for me. And so, especially since I'm so early on, that's what I was kind of focusing on. I'd play, like, on my lunch breaks, and when I got a little time here and there. So it didn't really grab me right away. But then once from there, I started going to the challenge, and then later, which we'll talk about, the Chaos Shrine especially. Like, that's when it really got its hooks in me, like, playing on the harder difficulties. You know, it's when you get to that point where the songs actually feel like you're playing along with them. You know, that very easy mode, it's kind of like in any rhythm game where it's like you're just playing the very basic beat. But then once you get to those harder difficulties, it's like every stroke and tap you make is like with some sort of like percussion or note in the song. And that's when like you really like, your brain kind of turns off and like you get into just the real rhythm of it. And like it's just like second nature.
Trance mode.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I would sort of equate like playing through the series on basic to like walking through a museum of, you know, Final Fantasy music history and, like, pushing a button every once in a while to trigger something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the one-to-one orchestration.
It kind of gives you that time to, like, look at the cutscenes, look at the stuff in the background. That's you know, in that first playthrough, that's when I noticed, like, oh, it's that boss from that game that I'm fighting.
And or, it makes sense to
do
that.
I remember this part of 6. I remember this part of 4. I remember this part of 7.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense to do that because once you get to the higher difficulties, you know, there's no way that you're going to
yeah.
pay a second of attention to anything up there.
You're going to be like, oh, shit, there's Eris.
Yeah, you're just going to flail at the screen.
Yeah, anything in the background is just inconsequential at that point. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that the early stages are kind of slow going. But I think it's that way. And to familiarize yourself with any of the songs you might not already know. And just like that, yeah, just to kind of, it's like the training wheels.
Yeah, I do feel like a lot of care was paid in this game. I mean, even though it's totally blatant, ridiculous fan service, but it also kind of takes its time that if you're not super familiar with Final Fantasy, it gives you that opportunity to kind of, you know, get a little familiar with the series, kind of get a feel for what the, you know, the themes of the games are, you know, both musically and by looking at those, the cutscene videos, which you can unlock as you play through the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I haven't actually. I think the first one I unlocked was for Final Fantasy I.
Yeah.
Which I started playing, and I'm just like, why the fuck am I watching this?
Worthless.
Like, this is like I have a little bit of affinity for Final Fantasy I because I think that might have been the first Final Fantasy game that I actually played.
Oh wow.
I borrowed it from a childhood friend's house and then never returned it.
Nice. Way to go.
I have it. It has their last name written on the back.
What a friend.
Yeah.
Let's put some tape over that.
I mean, they stopped playing video games. I don't think they really cared or noticed.
They lent
it to me. It's just that yeah. Do not listen to this podcast. I will take it down. But yeah, I mean, I have some affinity for Final Fantasy I, so it was great hearing the music. But like that story don't mean shit.
No. Right.
Yeah. I will say you didn't mention it, Neil, when you were talking about how to play the game. But I like the way they try to work in some of the Final Fantasy tropes. So like for instance. While you're playing, you have a health bar. So rather than like in Rock Band or something where it's like, you know, the audience turning on you if you do so bad, it's like every time you miss a note, you take damage. And then what's great about that is you can equip items and spells that, you know, can refill your health. So you can equip like a high potion where when your health gets so low, it refills. Or you can use spells like cure or prayer and things like that to boost you and like get you through songs.
You basically have triggers that you set up for like certain situations. Like if something goes bad or if you get like a really good streak, it'll set something up.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, like, it'll be, like, you know, to activate thunder, you need to, like, hit 20 notes in a row or something.
Yeah.
And then they also have, in each of the three different stages, there are, like, event triggers or something like that. I forget the exact name. For the field things, it'll activate a chocobo that if you do well enough in this, then you'll go really fast through the event stage, which doesn't really mean anything when you're playing it through series and challenge, but it means a lot in Chaos Shrine. And then in the battle mode, you'll unlock summons, which it seems like there's like three different ones that are pretty common. And I did notice that I've been getting items that are like Bahamut's Magicite or whatever that I guess I can use Bahamut as a summon.
Exactly, yeah.
I think there is a trophy associated with that, so yes, I will do it, game. And then for the event modes, they basically just have, like, extended versions of the songs that you can unlock.
You basically see, like, the end of the cinematic. Like, if you fail, like if you don't get it, then it just sort of ends. But then if you get it, you see kind of, like, the happy resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, something that's kind of weird about the scoring system that I've noticed, because it's, I mean, it's the traditional, like, you know, D, C, B, A, S, and then there's a double S and even a triple S.
Mm-hmm.
But the highest you can go if you have items equipped is an S rank, which is like, I guess like it's like 7 million or something.
It's like 7 million
with a bunch of nines at the end of it.
Exactly.
But then if you unequip all items and spells, you will get a stoic bonus, which adds 2 million points to your total.
Yeah.
So you can get up to, you know, 9999999999. I don't know if I got all the nines right, but it's 9 million with a bunch of nines at the end of it. And you can get triple S if you nail that, or a double S if you get over 9 million.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird that, like, there's this inherent limit to how well you can do unless you take out all your items, which also means that you can't get any of the event triggers, like the summons, the chocobos, or the extended versions of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of annoying, because it's like kind of like, I want to see, you know, the summons, I want to do the summons, I want to go through that, but then I'm like, but I want to get a high score, too.
Right. I remember, you know, when the game first came out and stuff, like, I was doing some research, like, on Japanese forums and stuff like that, taking a look at, like, high scores, and, you know, I had got, like, a perfect score on a couple of songs, and I was like, wow, I'm pretty awesome, and then I found out that, you know, there's these higher things, and It's like, my God, I am not going to play through this song again and do this. I mean, I kind of want to, but then again, on the same hand, it's like, my God, that would just take a really long time. And
if I A or S rank a song, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I got, you know, all critical strikes, you know, S rank. That's awesome. You know, perfect score. That's good enough for me.
I don't think I've gotten an all critical strike. I think I've been like one or two short of an all critical strike run.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I hope to at least get one of those.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I have like one or two, and I've put in like 50 hours, so.
All right, well, now that we're talking about, you know, what we've talked about so far, it would seem ridiculous that you put 50 hours in this game. But what kind of sets this game apart is the Chaos Shrine, or I guess Chaos Temple, as it's called in Japan. Mm-hmm. And in this, what it is that there's these things called Dark Notes, and you start off with just one, and it'll be a random combination of two songs, a field stage and then a battle stage. But some of, like, the event stages from the other games will show up as field or battle stages. And there's a total of 9 different songs that you can go, or 10 songs that you can go through for a field stage and a battle stage. So it's still kind of limited. I mean, they bandy around that, like, there's nearly infinite possibilities, but there's really not. Because there's only, you know, I guess there's still a lot of pairings, but there are 10 field songs you can get for Chaos Shrine and 10 battle songs you can get for Chaos Shrine. And what it does is it kind of, as far as I can tell, it changes up the note structure of everything and kind of makes it more difficult. And depending on what your median level is when you beat the previous Dark Note, then you'll unlock a new one kind of tuned for that difficulty. And your goal in that, in the field stage, is to go as far as you can, so that way you can unlock a harder boss. If you kind of don't go far in the field stage, which to go far into it, you need to have a character with good agility, you know, hit your notes, don't fall down, get the chocobo, and there's other bonuses you can equip as well. But if you don't go far enough, then you'll face the first boss and basically get, like, bullshit rewards if you beat a boss. And then if you do well enough, then you'll get to boss 2 or 3, and I can't really tell how it determines if you're going to fight boss 2 or boss 3. And then in the battle stage, your goal is to defeat the bosses as many times as you can, and then you'll usually get, if you're facing a 2 or a 3 boss, different crystal shards, which then unlock more characters. But the ridiculous thing about that is that you need to unlock 8 of each shard to unlock characters, and I believe there's something like 15 characters to unlock. Right. So you need to get, you know, what, I don't feel like doing math, 15 times 8, that's like, that is a shit ton of crystals that you need to get.
I think there are like a total of like 64 crystals, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But I will say that Chaos Shrine is like where the game hooked me last night. Like I finally started messing with it because I hadn't done that yet, and then that's like where all the hours went, because not only is it just addictive, but it's so quick. It's so easy to get in and out and move on to the next one. Because, like, when you're playing series, you've got the intro and the outro music, which you said aren't very interactive. And you could skip them, but even after you skip them, it takes, like, 15 seconds before you move on to the next song. And then, you know, I really hate the event stages. I find them, like, the least interesting of the bunch. So I'm glad they're not in the Chaos Shrine. So, so it's great. It's like you just hop in, you're given 2 random songs. The note structure is different depending on which one you're doing. So you can do the same song twice in a row, but playing through it is actually different, which is great. And then, then you're just on to the next one. And it's so awesome. I did like 14 of them last night. It was just awesome. I loved it.
See, my thing is I only have like 15 because I've started going back and replaying earlier ones to try to unlock characters. I unlocked Locke from Final Fantasy VI, so my work here is done.
I saw you tweeted that.
He replaced the fuck out of Zidane so quick. even if he's a lower level, I'm just like, you know what? If I just bring him with my mega team now, which is I've got Terra, I've got Cecil from Final Fantasy IV, and then Cloud. And Cloud and Cecil both have, I think it's Soul Strike or something like that, is Cecil's like kind of boss killing move, and then Cloud has Omni Slash. What happens is, like, I guess you get them around, like, I want to say, like, level 45 or 50. And basically just whenever a boss shows up on screen, they both use those moves, and it usually kicks the shit out of the boss. I had Zidane set up with one of those attacks, too. But then I noticed, as I was playing kind of lower-level stuff to farm crystals, that by the time he would get to do his move, the boss would already be dead for the other two guys.
Oh, wow. You know, what's funny is your party makeup before you switched out for Locke is the exact party that I was using.
Well, it's because those are the games that I'm most familiar with. I really like 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. And then I liked 9, and even though I think that 7's kind of a piece of shit now, you know, I have affinity for it. It's one, like, I think I've only finished, like, 3 Final Fantasy games to completion, and that's one of them, so.
Right, that was my exact thinking, too. It's like, I don't love 7, but I played it the fuck out of it when I was a kid, and, like, you know, Cloud's just so recognizable, it's hard not to bring him along.
And
but
Omni Slash is kind of dope as hell.
Yeah, what was your party makeup, guys? You, Nate, and Danny?
Yeah, I've had Cloud, Squall, Cecil, and I think Zidane, I think, for my first
okay.
Army.
Squall is part of my backup team. I assembled a backup team to initially get Locke a little leveled up and went through some challenge mode stuff.
Yeah, since then, I think I've leveled up 99 to all of my characters except for 2 right now.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, my whole party is 99. I have Terra, Cloud, Cecil, and the Warrior of Light.
I was thinking of including the Warrior of Light. Hmm. I actually started using Cid from Final Fantasy III because it's a Cid.
Yeah.
Nice.
But, and I mean, every character, it doesn't make a shit of difference when you're going through a challenge in series, like what character you use there, it's all personal preference. But once you do get to the Chaos Shrine, then it kind of does matter because, like, I have Terra as my party leader, and I think she has an agility up move that makes her agility, like, close to maxed out if it's not maxed out. And then, you know, Cecil's a fucking powerhouse, Cloud's a fucking powerhouse, and actually, as I'm kind of integrating Locke, I'm looking at him like, you know what, this motherfucker's going to be fast too, so maybe I can bring him up, and then I can have Terra more focused on being a magic user.
Right.
So there is that kind of, you know, that interesting dichotomy, which is something that when I first heard about this game, I was like, that's preposterous. They can't actually make a rhythm game sort of like Final Fantasy, but damn, they did it.
The Chaos Shrine, man, that's where it's at, for sure. Yeah. I'd imagine none of us have, but Danny, have you played, there's multiplayer in the Chaos Shrine, isn't there? How does that work? Do you guys know?
Actually, I haven't had a chance to play it.
I have read about this, so I can kind of explain it. What it is that, like, you'll do a Chaos Shrine multiplayer thing, and every person plays the same 2 songs, and whoever does the best, that counts for everybody. So it's kind of like non-interactive multiplayer. It's like, we're playing the same thing, but it doesn't really matter. But, like, I guess that is, like, you know, if you suck at the game and your friend's really good, then you can play some Dark Notes together, and then, you know, you can get some mad loot.
Okay, sure. So, I mean, would you be gaining experience on the...
I believe so.
That's kind of cool. And then there's a little, like, personal competition there, too. Like, if you want to beat your friend's score, it's like, rather than just compare high scores, you can go through it at the same time and, like, see who was better immediately. So that's kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the coolest multiplayer I've ever seen or heard of, but it seems like, you know, for what it is, it's kind of neat.
Yeah. Now, can we talk DLC? Because I think this is a big deal, especially for the 3DS.
Yeah. I think the way it's integrated is great, because it's just basically on the fucking main screen. It's just like, add-on content available, and you click on that, and it takes you to, I guess, like, a Theater Rhythm eShop. Uses, like, I think you can add money in there, I'm pretty sure.
You can.
I've heard. I didn't have to, because I only got 2 songs, and I had, like, $4 in my account. and then it's just like, you look at the songs, and you pick what one you want. There's no kind of way to preview them, which kind of sucks. You know, it's kind of like, it's like the eShop in that you're like, this is functional, but like, come on, guys.
but very limited.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If there was a preview feature, that would be awesome. But maybe, well, no, they won't add it. I was going to say maybe they'd add it in the future, but they won't. That won't happen.
But there are 8 songs available right now. I know Danny has like fucking almost everything. I know Nate and I both got Cosmo Canyon from Final Fantasy VII, and I got, I think it's like Final Battle from Final
Fantasy
IV.
Yeah, the Final
Battle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is funny because those are the exact 2 songs that I almost bought last night. I reviewed Brave recently and I sold it, and I got like $18 for it, so I just paid $2 and bought a $20 eShop card. And so like, it's just like burning a hole in my pocket. Like, I thought like I'd download like Mutant Buds and like some other things I never got a chance to play, but now it's just like, this is going to all end up being Final Fantasy songs. I just know it. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah, and it seems like in Japan, they had a DLC come out every 2 weeks. And how many would be in each batch, Danny?
Typically, there'd be about 4. I mean, with the initial one, it was the exact same songs that you guys had already received.
So we'll probably get 4 new songs every 2 weeks.
That's what I would think. Likely. And if it's going to be anything similar to what it is in Japan, it certainly seems like it might be. I think you'd probably get the same exact songs, too.
Yeah. I mean, I've no problem with that. It gives me what to anticipate. Exactly. I know there's some more think there's some more Final Fantasy VI songs, some more Final Fantasy VII songs I know that I'm kind of interested in.
There
definitely are.
Those
that's all I want.
Those
I just want the games that I've played. That's I want.
I mean,
How many total are there, Danny? Like, they're done now in Japan, aren't they?
I think they probably have about one more set to go.
They said 50-ish.
50, okay.
And right now, they're sitting at 11 sets of DLC, with the last one just coming out on June 27th. I wouldn't be surprised if this week, which the week we're recording, you know, if it comes out this week, maybe even being the last one. I mean, there's a ton of extra stuff you can buy, and I've dropped a ton of money getting all of them. So, I mean, in Japan, you know, in the States and in Europe, it's like, you know, a euro or, you know, like 99 cents per song. In Japan, for like the initial eight, they had like that for 100 yen, and then the other ones are all 150 yen each. So, I mean, I earn money in yen, so that's not a big deal. But, I mean, still, like, you know, 150 yen, like, for one song, you know, and there's four songs, you know, every couple of weeks or something. Yeah. It's kind of
right,
adds up
quick.
Exactly.
Now, those songs, they never – all you can do is challenge mode with those, right? They never get, like, brought into Chaos Shrine or anything?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's something that kind of sucks is that, like – I mean, because Chaos Shrine is definitely where I'm going to spend a lot of time, but I'm already repeating songs a lot. So that's kind of a bummer. I wish it could integrate maybe some of the DLC or something like that. That's kind of a missed opportunity, I feel.
Yeah, I think so too.
I thought it was kind of weird that like some of the songs that are in Chaos Shrine don't like transfer back over into Challenge. Like if I want to play Genova or something.
Well, you unlock that much further down the road because it's ridiculous because the way the game, I guess the structure is that you get Rhythmia. Which probably, you know, every song, maybe you're getting like 100 Rhythmia.
Maybe.
Give or take. It like depends on like how well you do. There's bonuses for like having a character from the game in your party and stuff like that. But let's say on average, around like 100 Rhythmia. In order to, and you get like some sort of bonus every 500 Rhythmia, which could be a shard, it could be, you know, unlocking a song in a music player, unlocking a video, unlocking something for your Profi card.
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll talk about in a little more, the Street Pass stuff. But then when you get to 10,000 Rhythmia, which, okay, around 100 a song, so just, you know, put that in your head for a little bit. then that's when you kind of activate, like, the conclusion to the story of the game, and then you unlock Dancing Mad from Final Fantasy VI, which is the shit.
That was a fantastic surprise.
Yeah. And then you unlock, I think, a new song
every
50,000 Rhythmia
up. It's 10,000, 15, 20, and then 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I know, at 10,000, you get another one. Yeah, and then 15,000, and then 20,000. And then I think you get to a point where it is, you know, every 25,000 you get a new song. But it's going to take so fucking long to unlock all the Encore and Chaos songs, as the game refers to them.
And it, trust me, it did take a long time. I did it. I have them all unlocked.
But you do play some of those songs before you unlock them in Chaos Shrine. Like, I just played Genova from Final Fantasy VII. But yeah.
I will say one sort of consequence of playing this game is that it just, we talked about this before recording, but it makes you want to go back and play like every Final Fantasy game, or at least the ones that you know that are beloved to you.
Mm-hmm. It's the worst.
And I think that speaks to like the hurdles with getting into Final Fantasy games, you know, the actual Final Fantasy games, because I'm sitting here and I have 9 downloaded on my PS3 and I was like just about to start it and I was thinking like, do I really want to make that kind of investment right now? You know, do like I have like at least 30, 40 hours to just like plug into a game right now, and really I don't.
Right.
And you have to play theater then.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of one of the downsides where it's like I really want to play these games, but I don't really want to play these games, you know?
Right.
I don't have the time to do it.
And I don't know about you guys. I mean, I'm really bad about starting games and then just not finishing them. And actually, I mean, I have a lot of experience with Final Fantasy games, but I don't have a lot of experience beating Final Fantasy games.
Yeah, I hinted at it earlier. I have only beaten 4, 6, and 7, and I only beat 4, like, 3 years ago for the first time. Mm-hmm. I've beaten 6, I think, twice. And I've beaten 7 once, and when I beat 7, that was probably 15 years ago.
Yeah. I mean,
I've gotten,
like,
halfway through 9, a quarter way through 10.
Yeah.
Played a little bit of 8. Played some 5.
Yeah.
I've gotten pretty far in 1, but 1 gets kind of brutal near the end, I feel.
One's pretty ridiculous, and I've played through almost all of the games except for, I think, 13.
Actually, I just bought 13 last weekend as part of a buy-two-get-one free sale at the GameStop.
Nice. Nice.
Did you get 13 too as well?
No.
No, that'll have to wait.
I mean, the other thing is that outside of having this severe craving for Final Fantasy games, which I was saying before the show, that once Vita has the ability to play PS1 games, I hope that this itch is gone, because I will just drop like $50 on all the Final Fantasy games that I can get on PS1.
Yeah.
Which I guess would be 7, 8, 9, and Tactics, even though Tactics doesn't have any representation in this game, which I find a little weird. But I guess the music might not work as well as some of the other stuff does.
Right. Well, with the DLC, it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, you do get stuff from, like, for example, there's I think, a track from Final Fantasy 13 2.
And there's one from a Gito or whatever the hell that's called now.
Type Zero.
Yeah, Type Zero.
Yeah, there's one from there. There's a bunch of, like, cool little things. Even, like, one from Final Fantasy Versus 13.
Which isn't even
released yet.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But they have, like, a song that they showed with, like, previews and stuff like that, like, back in 2006.
That game.
Yeah.
That ever comes out. And then there's the Street Pass stuff, too, in this game, which you make a profi card, as it's called in the North American version, which is just, like, it's a little profile. You can, like, pick a background, pick a character that you want to be on that, and then pick a message. My message is www.ninwr.com, as is my Street Pass message in general. And you can exchange dark notes that way. I know, Danny, you've had experience with the Street Pass. I have not yet.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I'm surprised it's still called Profi Cards. I was thinking maybe that would just be something they just keep in the Japanese version, because they like just shortening things like that sometimes with Japanese. So I was kind of surprised to hear that it's basically the same thing. But, I've actually got quite a few Street Passes, and I got quite a few dark notes. Some that are insane, where I'm just, I just, you know, get it. I'm like, oh, this looks fun. Okay, level 99, both of these songs or whatever, and I play it, and I just want to kill myself, you know. But yeah, it just gets pretty crazy. But I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, you can get a lot of cool stuff that you know, it would probably take you a while to get yourself, that you just get through Street Pass, which is actually pretty awesome. And then, too, just getting to see where the other people are at. Because, I mean, you could take a look at their profi cards and see how many hours they put in, the song that they played the most.
Yeah, which sucks for me, because it's like this fucking Final Fantasy III song that I don't even like. But I guess it just doesn't really keep track of, like, what you play in Chaos Shrine. And I played other songs at different difficulty levels.
Uh-huh.
And that only counts as, like, you know, once for Terra's theme on Basic, once for Terra's theme on Expert.
Yeah, so that's kind of annoying that they don't do it, but I think another thing that is kind of good, it goes, especially if you're playing on, like, a harder level, the other people that get your Street Pass are like, wow, this guy's playing, you know, this
song. Yo, man, look at my cred. I beat the man with a machine gun on Ultimate. Fuck you.
I got some street cred, bitch. You know? I mean, so, yeah.
I really like this game. It's probably, in all honesty, there's, you know, one other rhythm game series that has kind of taken my heart, and that would be Rock Band / Guitar Hero. And this is probably the only other rhythm game that I've played that I've gotten into I don't think it's ever realistic to think that I will get into a rhythm game as much as I did Rock Band. That was college, some things happened. But with Theater Rhythm, it's really like, it's that same feeling of Rock Band, where it's just like, I don't care if I played these songs a lot, I want to play them more, because there's different ways that, like, twist how you play it, and there's rewards for doing it, and it's fun. And I mean, I guess that proves that there are two, you know, I like a lot of different music, I like rock music, I like good video game music, so it kind of works out.
And mechanically, I think they're a lot alike, especially when you play the field stages and you've got the four different lanes like Rock Band does. And, you know, you might start out playing a simple song with, like, a couple notes per lane, but then, you know, once you get confident or something, you bump it up and you're like, I can manage all these, like, all this crap coming down each one.
Now, I guess as far as the series, there's been a lot of talk about kind of making it a series, Theater Rhythm. Mm-hmm. What other, I guess, Square Enix properties, or even just any other properties in general, would you like to see have this kind of game made out of them?
Oh, God. Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross.
See, I feel like you could do kind of like a Square Enix, like Theater Rhythm Square Enix, and have like basically everything except for Final Fantasy. I mean, I think a Dragon Quest would make a lot of sense for like Japan, but I don't think that would really be as well received in North America. But if you were to do one where it's just like, you know, we got some Dragon Quest, we got Chrono Trigger and Cross, we got like Xenogears and other shit like that. Mm-hmm. I think that would be really cool.
I was gonna say Mother, but I guess we're talking realistically here.
Yeah, I mean that would also
that would be amazing though.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Even just like a whole like just Super Nintendo one where it's just all like
the
RPGs
best
from even just other games too, not just RPGs, but just all the best tracks from Super Nintendo games.
Yeah, right. Or even like Theater Rhythm Mario or something like
that. Exactly. That's just waiting to make money. I mean, there's so many great, memorable Mario songs.
Yeah.
Like, that would be huge. And you get these, like, awesome cartoony, like, Marios and Yoshis and shit, you know, play as and stuff. That would be huge.
For fuck's sake, they made DDR Mario. Like, come on. This makes more sense.
Yeah. You know, I remember whenever they actually announced that they'd like to make the Etrithma series, like, one thing that they said they'd want to do is do it with Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Oh, wow.
I got one of the games on Virtual Console years ago on the US Virtual Console, and I played it for like 10 minutes and hated it. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the game has great music. I would assume so if that, you know, that's one of the things they were talking about, but
I think the problem is that anything after Final Fantasy, like unless you're going like Mario or Zelda, like just doesn't have the same cash.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be really tough to do like a Theater Rhythm sequel that's just like fucking Chrono Trigger. I mean, that would be cool, but then it's like, well, great, Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy had like 100 fucking songs, and now you're gonna like throw 30 at me?
Yeah, and I could see something like maybe Dragon Quest working, but then again, it just doesn't have the pull in, you know, basically outside
the variety.
Of Japan.
Because I feel like a lot of the Dragon Quest games just have like the same themes, the little tweak, which I guess is the same for Final Fantasy, but I mean, upon playing this game, like, there's a wide variety of music in the series.
Definitely.
I do love Final Fantasy XII. It just makes me feel like I'm fucking playing Star Wars, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I remember the music in that game and just the setting of that game kind of being reminiscent of Star Wars. But, like, I'm playing this, I'm like, if you told me this was in, like, Episode 3, I wouldn't have doubted you. Yeah, I think that's Theater Rhythm, guys.
Yeah, awesome game. I'd say even if you're not a fan of Final Fantasy music, like, if you like rhythm games, I think this is a great one.
Definitely.
I think you'll definitely get into it. And there's some great songs on here, like, regardless of being Final Fantasy music. Like, there's just some really great tracks to play along with.
Right, and, yeah, I mean, I put 50 hours into the game. I have, like, 86,000 Rhythpo. especially if you're a Final Fantasy fan, this is definitely something for you. And it just takes you kind of, it's a real trip down memory lane, and you get to just kind of relive all of the Final Fantasy moments you might have had in the past. It's a really great time.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And then you get to punish yourself with them over and over.
All right, well, I gotta go play some more Chaos Shrine levels. So, talk to you guys later.
Alrighty.
Alright.
Bye.
Bye. Alright, and that will do it for episode 42. As always, you can send us listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. If you'd like to, you can follow us on Twitter, go to the website, check the sidebar, and you can find all our usernames. And if you get a chance, you can rate and review us on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. Alright, we'll see you next week.